You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 1st of March 2014 on Monocle 24.
Whether it's a meaty slab stuffed with glossy supplements and polybagged listings mags, or it's a brand new slimline newspaper ready to face its challengers on a Saturday morning, the battle for the future of the newspaper is fixed firmly on the weekend. Today, we look at a freshly printed title that's just hit coffee tables in Australia, and we see what an established paper is doing to bolster its brand out of traditional office hours. All that on the 79th edition of The Stack. The coffee is brewed, the sourdough is toasted, and yes, the Saturday paper has been delivered. Today on The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print industry analysis show, we indulge in the art of weekend journalism. As dailies struggle, will the weekend edition succeed? That's certainly the view from Melbourne, where the jauntily named The Saturday Paper hit newsstands earlier today.
What I have as an editor is just what I've learned on the job, what I've picked up from senior correspondents, what I've picked up from that kind of grumble that is the white noise of newsrooms.
That was Eric Jensen of the Saturday Paper, and we also sit down with the editor, in fact my editor, at the Financial Times Weekend Edition, who reveals how her title is planning to stay a firm part of the global reader's print digest.
A lot of people still think FT Financial, which is great, but actually the Weekend FT is obviously a broader range of content. It's about life, arts, culture, wacky things you don't expect to find necessarily in the Financial Times on a weekday.
All that ahead on this special weekend-themed edition of The Stack, right here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio 2 with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, you might have noticed that Saturday and Sunday is the new battleground for newspaper publishers as weekday strategies are reconsidered and the weekend offers more time for readers to sit back and catch up on lengthy analysis pieces, fashion reportage and big juicy ads for luxury brands. With rumours circulating that the Wall Street Journal might launch a chunky global weekend edition to match its US offer and the New York Times spending to establish its name since it dropped the Herald Tribune brand, the FT's weekend edition has launched its first ever dedicated campaign to push its pink pages on a Saturday. Is this part of a major strategic rethink or more of an organic move on the part of the London-based paper? To get us going, I caught up with Caroline Daniel, the Weekend FT's editor, and also my editor, as I penned the weekly Fastlane column on the paper's back page. Caroline, there's been so much pre-press about this campaign, and I think a lot of discussion along the sidelines. Here you have a six-day-a-week newspaper. Everyone who watches CNN, BBC, lots of outlets will be familiar with the cities that sort of pop up out of these pages, the tagline, we live in Financial Times. And yet someone gave you the license and maybe the checkbook as well to go and do an entirely new campaign for the FT Weekend. Why? And what is that foreshadowing as well?
Well, I suppose I should all thank my editors and thank my managing editor for spending this money. Well, this is the biggest ever FT Weekend branding campaign we've ever undertaken. It involves a first ever TV commercial, which will be in lots of cinemas around the world, lots of outdoor branding, lots of outdoor sites. The idea behind it really is that people who buy the Weekend FT often are very different people to the audience who buys the FT. It's younger, it's a slightly different mix of people, and it is a separate brand. Unlike many other newspapers, when the brand like The Guardian obviously runs throughout the week, you are a Guardian reader. We do have a lot of our audience who dip into the FT during the week, but they don't need to know about every single detail of finance and economics. But they want to have a really good roundup, you know, read at the weekend. They want to feel global. They want to have an idea of what the world is thinking about culture and arts beyond just what they might get in a UK paper.
Mm. I mean, you as the editor probably don't need all of the research to go and prove certainly the amount that was required to do this. But nevertheless, was there traditional research done as well that also looked at, yeah, you know, maybe the split where the market is also going, less active purchase maybe, and this is, I'm just guessing, less active purchase Monday to Fridays, but also people feeling very, very different, invested in the FT Weekend in a very different way come Saturday?
Absolutely. So there are a number of issues we're trying to address in the campaign. One is a lot of people still think FT Financial, which is great, but actually the weekend FT is obviously a broader range of content. So there is a sort of a real branding initiative to say it's about life, arts, culture, wacky things you don't expect to find necessarily in the Financial Times on a weekday. But beyond that, it's a very different readership now. Obviously, during the week, a lot more people, it's a business purchase. They need it to do their jobs. We want to say the FT weekend, you need it to run your lives. You know, we help you make better decisions about, you know, where to eat, buy, what you should be looking at. You know, your advice in the column obviously is critical to our readership. And it's a very different kind of approach for what people wanted a weekend. So the whole campaign is obviously much more focused on the weekend branding that it is around it's useful. We have a very different readership. People buy it at retail at the weekend, whereas at the during the week, more people perhaps have it bought for them at their offices. So it's a personal consumer-led choice to buy it on a Saturday. You know, Saturdays are busy enough for our readership anyway. And we're asking people to take a lot of time to go and sit down with a product, which often is maybe 200,000 words every weekend. You know, that's a lot of time out of your weekend.
And it's a properly global campaign. We've seen it popping up all over the place. I'm wondering, though, is it pushing a little bit harder in certain markets? Does the campaign and just the FT weekend in general have to work harder in a certain corner of the world right now?
It's a great question. We're looking at Paris for this. We've got post-it campaign in Berlin. In April, we're going to be taking over lots of trams in Asia. In New York, we've got lots of sites planned, which will kick off. But behind this as well is launching a separate weekend FT subscription. So people can buy just the Saturday only edition. That's a new thing for the Financial Times.
As opposed to probably once upon a time, just forcing people into the full 6 days and not being able...
The 6 day Monty, yes.
Right.
So I think, you know, we all know that people are going online, particularly during the week. Mm. I mean, people are at their desktops during the week. At the weekend, we have lower readership in terms of people sitting at their desktop reading the Financial Times. They still want to sit down and print. Mm. So this campaign is very much around the print product. You know, we obviously are doing things on digital, but I know our advertisers and our readers really still love the print edition. Mm.
So today is the day that the Saturday paper has launched in Australia. Maury Schwartz is, some are saying it's of course, a little bit of a vanity project, but isn't that always been the case with many newspapers in many corners of the world? But it also comes at a time as well when some of the big traditional players, Fairfax, with The Age, with the Sydney Morning Herald, they're getting away from the big broadsheet format. They've slimmed them down. Many are predicting a change in paper, not for the better, for the worse. We're just looking at some dummy pages. And obviously, we've been talking last night to, of course, people who've really sort of seen the real thing. What do you think about that move in a very sophisticated market like Australia when it comes to newspapers? No shortage of Aussie editors and columnists and writers in this city to just say, yeah, let's just go for the weekend.
I think it's a great move. I mean, I think if I look at our readership, people still really want to sit down on a weekend and have a long form read. They don't want to read Twitter at the weekend. They don't want to be online in the same way, obviously, although tablet devices are still taking off and people are reading online. They still want a really long read, which sums up the week. Even our readers, often if they've been traveling during the week, you know, they haven't read the Financial Times, they want to have something which sums up the week for them. So what's really popular is anything which can give you a really good account, some great commentary on the week, and tells you what you need to know in a longer form way. I think this could be really interesting. I think vanity projects, a lot of newspapers these days are sort of vanity projects owned by oligarchs, aren't they?
Absolutely. I wanted to just go back to the focus, and I'm sure there's a strategic component to it as well. Much discussion all over the world that we might see many Monday to Friday print editions go away, more emphasis, of course, put on the weekend product. Will we see the FT weekend popping up in more places? You know, could you see a situation, Caroline, where maybe the paper is not even printing Monday to Fridays in some markets, but the FT weekend is actually there?
It will be fascinating. Distribution deals will be key to this. So what tends to happen in parts of Europe is that print presses, when lots of people are closing down their operations, become uneconomic. So obviously it makes the FT weekend even harder to distribute in new markets. Over the last year, the FT has actually been closing down some of its print operations and focusing on some key markets.
I know, I get the letters of complaint from the readers.
Yeah, so it's happening. On the other hand, it means we're focusing on, you know, really big cities. It's a slightly different readership at the weekend where it's maybe more luxury orientated than financial orientated. So if you're a luxury-led market, you might keep certain cities alive. But if you're an FT-led market, you might keep, you know, obviously focus on Wall Street over Chicago. So it's a really interesting balance for the print side. But we are now because of those print closures, we're now actually profitable in print around the world, which is an amazing move for us. That's a great kind of thing to start from. So I'd like to see readership expand for the print edition, you know, not shrink in terms of the cost side.
Now, the week rounded out with Pearson's results coming out. A company, they certainly don't make any secret of the fact that they want to be known for, of course, being, you know, the great house of educational books, devices, anything you may need. And, of course, a lot of question marks about who might swoop in and pick up the FT. But if you dig into the results, how was it received on Friday morning?
Well, on the Financial Times side, we're quite happy. We're very profitable at the moment. And although I know we're talking about print here and the weekend FT, actually more than half our revenues come from digital now. And I think something like 2/3 of it comes from content sales, not advertising. So we made a really aggressive shift in the last few years away from an advertising-focused business to people pay for our copy and they pay for your column in the Financial Times. So I think that's... We feel quite buoyed up by the fact we've managed this transition so far really well, and people are willing to buy us in digital. And the educational publishing business is going to be going the same way towards a digital-led strategy.
Safety in numbers. Wall Street Journal, of course, have really ramped things up. They've got a supplement. Of course, a lot of effort into just rebranding what was the IHT, to which is now, as we call it in the office, INIT. So does that help you when there's actually a sector? Of course, you know, everyone wants to sort of lead in the pack, obviously. But having a strong competition around you as well at the weekends, good for everyone?
Well, I'd like to see more competitors go bust, particularly in the UK, which is a very hard market. You know, massive slabs of copy coming through your letterboxes in the mornings. The Wall Street Journal is a fantastic proposition, as is the New York Times, obviously. Robert Thompson at the Wall Street Journal used to run the weekend FT when he was at the FT, so he's obviously taken a lot of his original ideas over there. And it's a great marketplace for people. I mean, people want to sit down and read at a weekend. You know, when they're waiting in cars to pick up their daughters from ballet, or you know, they want to be saved time in terms of what they should be buying in the and clothes, outfits, books. So it's still a great market for people to be targeting, particularly for advertisers. I think it's a very strong advertising market still, the weekend paper.
And I wanted to end on that note. Do you see this becoming even more premium? Because over the last few years, of course, it's been hard for some financial institutions. So, you know, I think it was amazing for so many titles, FT, Monocle, etc., that there were the luxury goods companies, there were some airlines that had deep pockets, etc. And you know, I think sort of post-2008, it's interesting to look at what the advertising landscape looks like now. I mean, it's very, very different at the weekends. And do you think that that can even, and I know you said it's wonderful that people pay for the paper, it's also nice having ads as well.
On the advertising side, it's been robust, I have to say, particularly probably for Monocle and the luxury end of the market. I mean, our advertising was down about 1.5% year on year. I mean, that's pretty great in this marketplace. And we see that being pretty consistent. So I think our issue is less about, you know, advertising falling, you know, collapsing, and more about how do we grow the market for readers? Because as more people do, you know, slimmer issues of newspapers, you know, we've seen other Sunday papers over here use different paper and shrinking the editions. I think we're really keen to carry on. You know, we have a large print edition. House and Home has actually doubled in size over the last few years. So people, you know, we're still growing our print product, which is great to see.
That was Caroline Daniel, the editor of the FT Weekend. After the short break, we'll be going to Melbourne to hear from the editor and publisher of the Saturday paper.
If you're after a soundtrack to your working day, look no further than Monocle 24's Globally Minded playlist. We play the very best upbeat music from around the world, around the clock. Whether that's jazz from Japan, pop from Paris, house from Hamburg, or soul from Seoul. It's all picked by our team and presented by our editors. So get lost in music with Monocle 24's playlist right here, day and night, on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome back to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, where we're having an in-depth look at weekend newspapers. Today, Australians awoke to find a handsome new title on their newsstands. The Saturday paper boldly defies the notion of a global downturn in newspaper circulation, rolling out 100,000 finely printed editions across Melbourne, Sydney and Canberra. The paper aims to entice a savvy inner-city reader to rediscover the value of a great printed newsread, providing a beautifully crafted paper with a strict focus on quality journalism. We sent our correspondent Nolan Giles to catch up with the team behind the Saturday paper at its home in Melbourne.
While many of the sounds of Melbourne's bustling city streets haven't changed much over the years, the tram bells, the street performers, the cries of the once famous Melbourne newsboy selling the dailies and the weekend editions have long faded. As newspaper circulation steadily dropped, and titles have been consolidated to a point where Rupert Murdoch controls over 70% of the nation's papers, the prospect of launching a new, independent weekend edition is daunting, to say the least. Enter Maurice Schwartz. Today he launches the Saturday paper, with the aim of breathing new life into the Australian weekend newsstand.
I'm Maurice Schwartz. I'm a publisher, and I've been a publisher for 40-odd years. Books was the way it started, and then eventually the frequency changed and we started publishing the Quarterly Essay, which is well known in Australia, and then after that we went to the Monthly, which is a monthly magazine, and now we've gone weekly. I hope we never have to go daily.
Do you think you could take us through the business reasoning behind the newspaper? Obviously, it's an odd time to launch a newspaper the way the market is in terms of the newspaper industry. What's the business model behind the Saturday paper?
We see an opportunity here where others are seeing a real crisis, and it is a crisis for others. And the reason it's a crisis for others is that they're kind of stuck in a legacy situation where the model that they've got is very hard to change. They've got big newsrooms. They've got enormous staff, they've got plant, all kinds of things, so huge costs. But unfortunately, the revenues have dropped. The revenues have dropped because they've migrated online. So our model is very simple. It's a startup, it's got no legacy costs, there is no management structures, it's myself and then the editor. It's basically a lowering of costs. We run it like a small business rather than like a huge business. And with technology today, you can do that. It's like a double-edged sword, really. Whilst it's hurting the existing papers and the existing media organisations, it assists a small organisation, a startup.
For a new title, Schwartz has brought new talent into the mix. Eric Jensen is the 25-year-old editor of the Saturday paper, who cut his teeth in the newsroom of the Sydney Morning Herald before joining the project 18 months ago.
Having never had theoretical training in what it was to be a newspaper man or what newspapers were supposed to be, what I have as an editor is just what I've learnt on the job, what I've picked up from senior correspondents, what I've picked up from that kind of grumble that is the white noise of newsrooms, that the constant put upon, downtrodden, cranky reporter that wants to tell you what's wrong with the newspaper and what the newspaper really should be. And I thought I was, you know, just part of this general white noise grumble. But in actual fact, I think sitting at the back of a newsroom, listening to really terrific senior reporters complain about the paper day to day has been a masterclass in what a paper should be, at least a paper conceived from those senior reporting desks. And so in the last 18 months working on this paper and sort of bringing it through, I've really just been putting into print, into some kind of living form, the complaint of a well-informed newsroom. We began by looking really closely at newspapers, deciding that they did certain things really well and that in those instances we'd have to find different ways of doing those things. But also we found that they were doing things, I think, less well, and that's what will end up as the core of this paper, is deciding to make our niche the niche that they've, I think, neglected in some respects. And that it's narrative journalism, strangely. The thing that seems missing in newspapers to me as I go through them is this fundamental storytelling tool, this sense of narrative. It's disappeared from stories. More often now, a news story is an assembly of facts. It hasn't an arc. It doesn't have something that pulls you through. It's not being thoughtful about the way in which it communicates with you. It's simply putting one idea after another. You see this series of inverted pyramids sort of scattered across a broadsheet page, and you wonder if there might be a more pleasurable way of having news told to you.
The newspaper is high-end, both in look and feel. It's printed on a 70 GSM extra-white stock, and while only 32 printed pages, its thick, tactile nature aims to entice a well-read consumer.
It's a luxury product, and I think that luxury products will want to advertise in here. The Monthly has taught us that the arts, opera, ballet, art galleries, like to advertise because, again, they're advertising in a high-level luxury product. We learnt a lot from The Monthly. And I suppose The Monthly is what has given me confidence to do this as well, because we are really the only current affairs magazine in the country. So we are the only one. So that emboldened me to think, well, it's possible.
From Melbourne, for Monocle, this is Nolan Giles.
That was our Brisbane correspondent, Nolan Giles, speaking to the Australian publisher and founder of the Saturday paper, Maury Schwartz. We're going away for a short break, a little bit of analysis on the Saturday paper right after this.
The Singapore Air Show is a magnet for the world's most important aerospace companies, all of them eager to sell to the high-flying Asia-Pacific market. Monocle got strapped in to gauge the state of the soaring industry.
The requirements for new military equipment here are vast and include not only combat and surveillance aircraft, but tankers and transports as well. Patrolling maritime borders was, however, one of the more dominant themes, and that's no surprise given current tensions in the region.
Pushington at the 2014 Singapore Air Show, premiering in the film's menu on monocle.com.
And welcome back to The Stack here on this Saturday morning in London on Monocle 24. So we heard from the editor and the publisher a little bit earlier, of course, about the launch of the Saturday paper. But let's delve into the copy of the very first issue of the paper with a woman who knows a thing or two about the Australian media landscape, as well as being a journalist and a commentator. Margaret Simons is director of the Centre for Advanced Journalism at the University of Melbourne. A few hours ago, she received Australia's day-old, at least by that point, newspaper on her doorstep, and she joins on the line now from Melbourne. Hello.
Hello.
So what is the verdict so far? I've received a couple of emails from readers, slightly mixed reviews, but generally I think people quite excited to see something that they can jump into in the cafes on, well, Saturday morning or Sunday if they want to.
Yes. Well, look, I think there's a tremendous amount of goodwill towards this effort, of course. Having said that, I think there's a natural law of new publications. It's a bit like making pancakes. The first couple never come out quite the way you want. And I think that while there's some terrific stuff in this morning's paper, it's got a way to go to meet some of its promise and potential.
Mm. Tell us, from an overview perspective, whether we're jumping into the writing, but I guess it's always going to be first impressions. This has to sit alongside, certainly, where we're chatting from. It has quite a plucky Australian Financial Review, which has put a lot of effort into its weekend edition. Of course, we've seen the reinvention of the, I believe, The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald have both reinvented themselves today as well. So does it jump out from the newsstand, Margaret?
Yes, I think it does jump out at the newsstand. I mean, in the other newspapers, there are now very few places where you can read more than 1,000 words on a single issue. And the Saturday paper is clearly distinguished by the fact that virtually all of the major pieces, the main one runs to about 3,000 words, and then there's four or five at about 1,200 word mark. So they're not doing anything superficially. There's, it's all long-form journalism. I think one of the great strengths of this first edition is actually the culture section. It is such a pleasure to read serious and considered book reviews and film reviews in a newspaper. It's one of the things I really miss about the Fairfax Press and the Murdoch Press, that the space for book reviews and the readability of the cultural reviews has really gone down in recent years, and that's one of the things I enjoyed most about this first edition of the Saturday paper.
There's been a lot of discussion, Margaret, also about just the physical form of this, that they've gone for a brighter paper, it's a heavier paper stock. Does it feel like a different proposition, and do you think this is something that the market needs when, of course, every big publisher is trying to reduce paperweight and really trim the actual physical product?
Yes, well, this feels like an indulgence. It's, it's a very nice white stock, very thick white stock, although it's only 32 pages. It feels very substantial in your hand. The adverts, I have to say, look quite stunning. I imagine the advertisers will be pleased. So yes, it's got the feeling of something a little bit special on a Saturday morning, I suppose.
Has it gone for more of a magazine pacing as well? And when you reference the ads, has it followed a magazine where most titles, certainly in the premium sector, try to stay away from the fractional ads that define newspapers? So is it more spreads and single pages?
Yes, a lot of single-page ads. The back cover is an ad, and I gather it always will be, which is a bit unusual. In Australian newspapers, the back page is usually sport. There's a few quarter-page ads, but yes, generally speaking, it's large display advertising, not little postage stamps.
Now, if they invited you in on Monday morning for the post-mortem of the title, your top three fixes, what do they need to do?
Look, I think given that people are really looking here for a very good read, I would have to say that the quality of the writing in a couple of the pieces up the front, I was a little bit surprised that the editing wasn't tighter. Quite a few cliches of the sort that you normally tell journalism students to try and avoid. That was a bit of a surprise in a publication of this quality. You know, there are another couple of pieces in there which I think, you know, are the exception to that, very well written. I suppose one of the things that's most striking is there's not much news in it. Those of us who sort of read three or four papers during the week, as I do, or stay in touch with current affairs, wouldn't actually have learnt much that was new from this, I don't think.
Margaret Simons, Director of the Centre for Advanced Journalism at the University of Melbourne in Melbourne, thanks very much for that. And that brings us to the end of this very special edition of The Stack. This is, of course, edition 79. A big thanks to my editor, Caroline Daniel, that's over at the Financial Times. Also, our producer today was David Pleasant, and behind the glass running this program is Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the very same time. I'll be on the other side of the world. I'll be in Asia, but you'll be in the capable hands of one of my colleagues here. Of course, you can always listen again via monocle.com. We're also on SoundCloud as well, and of course, iTunes. But now for me, Tyler Brulé, and the rest of the team, have a very good weekend and a great Saturday. News is next.